What's up, everyone? My name's Nick.
And I'm Em.
And welcome into the Ominous Archives. So, are you ready to go to Genovia today?
Genovia. Sure, let's go.
Right?
Yeah.
I never remember the actress's name who plays her.
Anne Hathaway?
Yeah. I always confuse her
Respectful. That's my girl, my queen.
No, no, no. Who plays Legally Blonde?
Reese Witherspoon?
No. Is that her?
Legally Blonde is Reese Witherspoon. No. I'm not sure if that's
what
you're
talking about. Boy, I'm a better actor than actresses. No, Sandra Bullock.
Okay, yeah, that I can see you mixing up. All the time. Reese Witherspoon does not look like Anne Hathaway at all. Okay.
I mix those two up all the time.
I see it.
So, yeah.
All right, yeah. Why are we going there? We're not
going to Genovia.
All right.
Tonight we are going to the quiet town of Geneva, New York.
I see.
Nestled beside the still waters of Seneca Lake. It's a place with vineyards, rolling hills, and... drumroll. We don't have one of those. Oh, it works. I was going to say, we don't have one of those things. A castle.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
It looks beautiful. Yeah. I'm looking at these pictures and I'm like, wow, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. The first one looks fake.
By the end of this, you might not think that.
Rats.
But it's not the kind you'd expect in upstate New York.
New York.
This one has turrets, towers, tunnels, and... your favorite thing, Em, ghosts.
My favorite. I love a good ghost in a castle.
So we had the technical difficulty. I'm sure you guys are all going to be able to hear that. Apparently, if your power brick goes onto your mic cable, you're going to hear the electricity running through it. So this is going to be the chilling tale of Bellhurst Castle. Now we're going to go back to the land before time. And we see that Ducky and Petrie and Littlefoot. So... this is not going to be the land before time. But, so before the stone walls of Bellhurst Castle were built next to Seneca Lake, this land was home to something far older. Something sacred. The area now known as Geneva, New York, was once... looking for some grace here. Canandaigua.
Yeah.
It was a major village of the Seneca Nation, part of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. I can't say that.
Confederacy?
Yeah, thank you. Also called the Iroquois, these were the original architects of unity, a democratic alliance, often credited as one of the first successful model for what would become the United Nations. To the Seneca people, the waters of Seneca Lake weren't just scenic. They were spiritual. They called it the place of still waters. They believe spirits resided within it, that the lake, quiet on the surface, held power below. But the tranquility turned into tension. In 1756, British officer Sir William Johnson aided the Seneca in fortifying Canandaigua with palisades to protect against the French. But the peace was only temporary.
Of course.
Because in 1778... I don't know where I pulled another 8 from. I just, here's an 8. In 1778, in the chaos of the American Revolution, the British-aligned loyalist Walter Butler persuaded Chief Old Smoke that the American Continental Army planned to seize their land. In response, the Seneca struck first, launching a brutal attack in Wyoming Valley, Pennsylvania, that would go down in history as the Wyoming Massacre. The American response was swift and devastating. President George Washington ordered General John Sullivan to retaliate. The campaign that followed wasn't just a battle. It was a calculated, scorched earth mission to destroy the Seneca and all their allied tribes. What followed wasn't just destruction of a physical village. It was the attempted dismantling of an entire way of life. Indigenous people were massacred. Over 40 Seneca and Iroquois villages were destroyed. Orchards that had grown for generations, apple trees, peach trees, cornfields, were cut down, trampled, or torched. Sacred burial grounds were desecrated. Women, children, and elders. Can you guess what happened? You want to take a guess, Sam? Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
No guesses?
No.
Jeez.
I'm upset. This is sad.
They were forced to flee into the woods, starving and exposed, as the fires behind them consumed their past.
That's horrid. That's really horrible.
I didn't know how dark you would go.
Yeah, I didn't know, honestly.
That's still dark. They had to flee their family, but it could have been a whole lot worse.
Yeah, that's...
In indigenous oral tradition, land is not just property. It's an ancestral spirit and witness. The trauma embedded in the soil doesn't just vanish. It lingers. Some say that the spirits of those lost during this time remain connected to the region, not in revenge, but in mourning, wandering and displaced, or protective, holding on to what was taken. And when the war ended, the British, once allies of the tribes, offered no help. Many newly empowered Americans viewed the indigenous people with rage, but there were others who urged for peace. Governor George Clinton of New York even recognized that the land rightfully belonged to the native people, but fear, mistrust, and broken promises unraveled most treaty negotiations. Distrustful of the young American government, the tribes watched as their lands were bought and sold. By the early 18th century, the region was claimed by the state of Massachusetts, and in 1738, two land developers secured vast tracts, including the very land Bellhurst sits on. It changed hands once again in 1810, purchased by a group of businessmen who founded the Ontario Glass Manufacturing Company, the first glass works west of Albany. When the company dissolved, its land was divided among the shareholders, and William DeLong received the most prized section, where the castle now stands. But DeLong didn't hold on to it for long. They should have called him the Short. In 1824, DeLong sold the land to a lawyer named Joseph Fellows, an Englishman who never lived there. Instead, a mysterious man named William Henry Buckey moved in under the alias Henry Hall. Now, he lived in seclusion in a home called The Hermitage, and I had no idea how to say that until I listened to, like, another podcast where they said Hermitage. I was like, it is Hermitage. Okay.
There we go.
With only one servant. He spoke to a few, and when he died suddenly after breaking his leg, followed by blood poisoning, the townspeople were stunned to learn his real identity. Buckey had once been the treasurer of London's famed Covent Garden Theater, and he embezzled funds, married his own stepmother,
what?
And fled to hide in America. Yeah.
Married his stepmother is crazy. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
And when he broke his leg, he fell over something.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never broken a bone, so I don't know.
You've never broken a bone?
Nah.
In your whole life, in all the sports that you've played, you've never broken, not even like a finger?
Nope.
That's actually very impressive to me. Knock on some wood right now, but that's actually crazy.
Yeah.
Sorry, proceed.
Yep.
I've broken like five.
Nope. Not that I know of.
That's insane.
Oh, yeah.
Proceed. Sorry, that just took me off guard.
Mm-hmm. Where was I going with that? Oh. So I don't know if it was like a compound fracture, because you got blood poisoning from it.
Right.
So I don't know if, like, if your bone just breaks,
yeah,
your mom would know.
Right.
And it doesn't, like, get set correctly again. Yeah. If that could give you blood poisoning.
Mm.
Or if...
Also, when are we talking? We're in the 18s here.
Yeah.
Right. How much medical did we have?
At that point, though, he probably could have still went to a doctor.
Yeah.
And they would have did something.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, if they had to, maybe amputate the leg or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But he wouldn't have had to die from blood poisoning.
Yeah, that is crazy.
I wouldn't think.
Right.
So locals whispered about him for decades, and some claimed that he built escape tunnels beneath the property, one that would be tied to the infamous Lady in White ghost said to haunt the grounds. After his death, strange occurrences began to circulate. The original hermitage was demolished, but its legend remains. The land changed hands several more times until 1852, when Harrison G. Otis renamed the estate Bellhurst, which means beautiful forest. After Otis, it became a public picnic ground known as Otis Grove, and by the 1870s, rumors of ghosts began to grow louder. Then came Carrie Horan. On May 13th, of 1885, she visited the abandoned estate, fell in love with the land, and her husband bought it. Now, they bought it the same day. Mm. Like, she saw the land, said how much, pretty much wrote a check and bought it. Mm. But they would soon divorce, and Carrie remained at the castle, remarried to Captain Lewis Collins, and began construction on what will become Bellhurst. Well, become Bellhurst Castle. Carrie commissioned the construction of a grand Richardson Romanesque style mansion, sparing no expense. Instead of using local stone, she imported Medina sandstone directly from Europe, a bold and opaque choice that added to the estate's mythic stature. Can you hear my throat's drying out? It took a team of 50 men more than 4 years to complete the castle. It was completed in 1889. Why does it take things so long to be built today?
Seriously.
4 years to complete this castle.
Right.
I feel like if you're going to build a house, it takes like, I don't know, two or three.
Mm-hmm.
She built a mansion in four. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Get it done, people.
The result was a towering storybook structure with arches, turrets, and intricate masonry that seemed to rise right out of the forest itself. But that work came at a cost. During construction, one laborer fell from the tower to his death. Hmm. Another, tasked with setting the roof, reportedly lost his mind, consumed by an unknown force or pressure that remains unexplained. Some say that this was the beginning of Bellhurst's dark energy, laid brick by haunted brick. Then there's the legend inherited from the land's previous owner, William Henry Bucket, a fugitive from London. It said he built underground tunnels connecting the estate to the shores of the Seneca Lake. The secret passage meant for escape, though no official map shows these tunnels. Some guests swear they hear footsteps beneath the floors, steps that don't belong to anyone alive. Of all the spirits said to roam Bellhurst Castle, one appears again and again in whispered stories, misty photographs, and middle-of-the-night encounters. Every great haunting begins with a story, and at Bellhurst Castle, that story centers mainly around one ghostly figure, Isabella.
Oh.
If we would have called the baby Isabella. Craig was like, we can't. I was like, why? She was like, because you would say it like that every time. I was like,
it's my best friend's name.
Right. Do you say it like that every time? Isabella.
Most times. Her contact on my phone is literally ISSA Bella. Isabella.
Oh. Wait, are you talking about Bella?
Yeah. Her name is Isabella.
Mm, yeah.
We just call her Bella.
Yeah. But the truth about Isabella? Even her story is far more complicated than it first appears. So most locals and visitors know her simply as the Lady in White, but dig deeper and you'll find more than one version of who she really was and how she died. According to the castle's own historical pamphlet, Isabella Robinson was a celebrated opera singer in the 1800s. She performed at London's famed Covent Garden Theater and was married to William Henry Bucket. Which, it's definitely not Bucky. Bucket, or however I'm saying it, but we're rolling with it.
Close enough.
The theater's treasurer and manager. When Bucket embezzled funds and fled England, Isabella followed him across the Atlantic to Geneva, New York, where they built a life and a secret. Author David Sackmister, in his book, The Bellhurst Story, offers another twist. Isabella wasn't Bucket's wife, but his mistress. Mm. A scandalous affair. A fight fueled not by just crime, but passion. But that's not the only contradiction. Some versions say Isabella wasn't British at all, but rather a Spanish opera singer fleeing an abusive husband with her lover, possibly not William Bucket. In this telling, they hide out in what would one day become Bellhurst Castle, hoping to escape the man hurting her. Two origins, two men, maybe even two Isabellas. Or maybe, over time, the threads of two separate tragedies woven together into one haunting tale.
I feel like that happens a lot with, like, stuff when you're talking, like, so back there. Like, you're gonna hear, like, so many...
Multiple.
Mm-hmm. Like,
multiple versions.
Yeah. Shit gets crushed in the crossfire, you know.
Yeah. So the other thing I heard, while the detail of her life remains tangled, the way Isabella died is always tragic. But even here, there's conflicting versions. In the version favored by Bellhurst Castle's official account, Isabella and her companion attempted to escape through a secret tunnel leading to Seneca Lake, and as they emerged, a massive wave crashed over them. Both were dragged into the frigid water. Their bodies were never found. Sockmeister's version is darker. He claims Bucket had rigged the tunnel with a trap, a last-ditch effort to crush any pursuers. As they fled, Isabella dropped her torch, and when she bent over to retrieve it, he mistakenly believed she had passed him. He triggered the mechanism, the tunnel collapsed, and Isabella was buried alive.
Bad.
Of course, official death records show Bucket died from blood poisoning. So take this account with a little grain of salt.
Right.
One of those little guys. Not one of the big ones that you can see. Guys. The little ones.
Not the Himalayans.
Not the Himalayan sea salt. We're talking like the iodized salt. Whichever version you decide to believe, the results are the same.
Right.
Isabella dies, alone, in terror, and yet, she remains. Visitors have reported seeing her, a pale woman in a flowing gown, gliding silently across the lawn, or hovering outside the castle's windows. Some say she's even flown through the windows.
Hmm.
Guests describe her hearing faint arias echoing through empty corridors, catching the sudden scent of roses just before the room turns cold, a door slams, or the lights begin to flicker. Visitors have detected unexplained cold spots around the tunnel's sealed entrance in the basement, the very one she's said to have died in or passed through. Author Elizabeth Mayetti, who based on one of her novels on the legend, recalled seeing a photo taken by a guest inside the castle. In it, a living man is seated and two ghostly figures flank him. One appears to be wearing a ballroom gown. The other sits nearby in period clothing. Both blurred, but both unmistakably there.
I hate that. Like, that's so crazy.
It's super crazy.
Like, that's just spooky.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Author David Sackmister, while staying overnight with his wife, swears they both saw Isabella's ghost walking across the lawn beneath the moonlight. In fact, it was this sighting that prompted him to write his book, The Bellhurst Story. In summary, he wrote, "In the winter of 2000, I surprised my soon-to-be wife, Amy, with a birthday getaway to Bellhurst Castle. We booked a night in the tower suite, perched on the top floor, overlooking the dark expanse of the lawn and still moonlit waters of Seneca Lake. As we stood at the window, gazing over the lake, something below caught both our eyes, and we froze. There, standing between two tall evergreens, was a woman in a flowing white gown, staring out over the lake. Amy glanced at me, just in time to see the hair on my neck standing on end, my heart pounding as I tried to rationalize the image. Maybe it was a trick of the moonlight or a reflection from the dining room lights. But the longer we stared, the clearer she became. The figure wasn't an illusion. She was real. And she was watching something only she could see. We eventually crawled into bed, but I barely slept. I was jolted awake again and again by knocks at the window, scraping on the pipes, soft scratching at the door, and what sounded like slow, deliberate footsteps climbing the turret stairs outside our room. In the morning, we checked out. I didn't think about that moment again until 2 years later. One October evening in 2002, Amy and I were having dinner while flipping through TV channels. She paused on a Halloween special about haunted locations, and suddenly, an image of Bellhurst Castle filled the screen. The reporter spoke of ghostly sightings, most famously a lady in white, seen gliding across the lawn. The story told of a tragic romance between a famed opera singer and her forbidden lover, and a death that left her spirit trapped at the castle, grieving in internal solitude. Amy and I looked at each other, forks frozen halfway to our mouths. We had seen her.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because mm-hmm.
How do you explain that? Like, you can't. I just don't understand. Mm-mm. Like,
I'm telling you, Gettysburg is going to be... That's going to be one.
I'm low-key scared. Like, I'm kind of, like, scared.
Why?
I don't know.
You want to know something cool? I don't know if I wanted to tell you now or on a wait.
God.
The inn that we're staying in is one of the most haunted places in Gettysburg.
Yay! Perfect! Can't wait! I'm going to literally cry.
Yep. That's why I wanted to stay at that one.
Of course.
I mean, Hotel Gettysburg is super haunted, too.
Yeah.
But both of those locations are haunted.
Perfect.
So, yep. Anyway, back to Bellhurst. To this day, some locals say that they've seen her pacing the lake's edge, always looking out over the water, waiting. Waiting for her love to return, waiting for justice, or perhaps simply stuck in a moment she can never leave. And as the details of her life and death grow more fractured with time, so too does her spirit. The woman caught between stories, identities, and endings.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like, to me, what's interesting is if she was killed in the tunnels, why is she out looking over the lake?
Yeah.
You would think if she's stuck, like, repeating the same thing over and over again, she would keep getting trapped in the tunnels.
Yeah, this is true.
And then, what was the other one? I just read it. You'd think I'd remember. How she died with, what's his face?
Crushed her, right? Is it the tunnel?
That was the second story. I can't remember what the first one was now. Oh, the wave. That one can make sense.
Yeah.
That would make sense on why she keeps going back to the lake.
Yeah.
So, that kind of works. I think that kind of fits. Now, you can't go spend the night at the Bellhurst without having a drink at their bar. So, bartenders at the castle's bar have long whispered about the mischief that seems to come from nowhere. Glasses suddenly leap from shelves and shatter on the floor, even when no one's near them. Bottles tip over without warning. And more than one staff member has felt an icy breath on their neck or hand on their shoulder, only to turn around and find the room completely empty.
Nope.
But not all the energy here feels dark. In fact, many of the bar's strange occurrences are attributed to a former caretaker named Dick O'Brien, who died in the castle in 1972. Guests and employees alike have seen Dick's ghost strolling up the main staircase or sitting quietly in his favorite chair, watching the room as if he never left. Others say he's the one behind the more playful pranks. This is a good one. Tablecloths mysteriously tied to the chandeliers are frequently reported by the staff at the castle. Glasses also fly off counters, and flickering lights that go haywire when certain songs play are a common occurrence. Could you imagine being like a person, an employee at the restaurant or the bar, and you walk in and all the tablecloths are just tied to the chandeliers?
No, literally.
Think about how crazy of a prank that would be, though. To have to try and, like, if you were a person to do it,
right? The effort.
You would have to get a ladder and move the ladder to every chandelier.
Right.
That's a lot of work for a prank.
Yeah.
Dick doesn't seem angry, just restless, maybe a little cheeky. A presence more interested in having a laugh than scaring anyone. But not all the spirits here are lighthearted. Late at night, when the last wedding toasts have been made and the last cork has popped, the bar area grows quiet, and that's when the singing starts. Staff and guests have reported hearing a lullaby, soft, slow, and almost too distant to flow. Drifting through the castle's halls, some say it's a woman's voice. Others aren't sure. But one thing is consistent. No one's there when they investigate. Even more chilling, it often happens after midnight, long after the castle goers have gone to sleep.
Nope.
There are also ghosts in Bellhurst that no one can quite identify. Guests, particularly pregnant women, have reported hearing the sounds of children playing or even screaming in the room next door. But when they do check with the front desk, those rooms are either empty or haven't been occupied in days. Others have heard furniture being dragged across the floor overhead, loud enough to wake them up in the middle of the night, but when they go upstairs, the space above them is empty. These unexplained noises often come from what was once the old casino room, a relic of Bellhurst days as a Prohibition-era speakeasy and gambling hall. Back then, roulette wheels spun, glasses clinked, and secrets flowed like bootlegging liquor.
I think speakeasies are so sick.
Mm-hmm.
They're so, so cool.
There's apparently a Greek one in Philly I just saw.
All right, let's go. When are we going?
I don't even know where it is. Well, it literally just popped up.
Figure it out.
Like speakeasies.
I want to go to one so bad.
I told you about that one that Frank and I, Alpine Rose.
Yeah.
So good. Food's amazing.
Yeah.
So good. It's pricey, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
So cool. But yeah, I just saw apparently there's a Greek one somewhere in Philly. When it comes to the ghost stories, some are passed down, others are printed in brochures or books, but the most chilling are the ones that come straight from the people who lived them. The following encounters were shared by listeners and hosts of the Stoned Witches Hour podcast, people who have stayed at Bellhurst Castle and came away with more than just a vacation memory. So listener report number one, one guest described hearing beautiful singing coming from the room next to hers. She assumed it was a mother singing a lullaby to her daughter and mentioned it at checkout, just as a passing compliment. But the receptionist paused and then explained that no one had been staying in that room.
Nope.
Listener report number two. A listener named Gail B. shared a far more terrifying experience. While staying in the tower room, she woke up in the middle of the night to the sound of creaking floorboards. When she opened her eyes, she saw a shadowy figure pacing the room, back and forth, with no face. No form she could explain, just a presence. She said it didn't look at her, but it knew she was watching. Another story came from Suzanne Horman, a former employee at Bellhurst Castle. She spoke of an elderly couple who described having breakfast while chatting with a friendly old gardener. The man seemed kind, if a bit distracted, and wandered off after a short while. But when they described him, Suzanne was stunned. There was no one working at the castle who matched their description. The man they described, however, sounded exactly like the former handyman who had died in 1972.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm. So skeptics, they say it's all just a power of suggestion, that the castle's age, design, and remote location make it ripe for overactive imaginations. When it comes to the paranormal, Bellhurst Castle sits in a curious position. Even though it was recognized as one of the best haunted hotels in USA Today's 10 Best Reader's Choice 2019 contest, along with two other New York locations, despite its Gothic architecture, tragic backstory, and rich 19th century opulence, there are only two widely recognized hauntings consistently tied to the property. The Lady in White, Isabella, and the mischievous spirit of the former caretaker, Dick O'Brien. There were whispers of other spirits, unknown voices, shadowy figures, phantom children, but nothing has ever become as iconic as Isabella's weeping figure near the lake or Dick's prankster-like energy at the bar. What's even more fascinating is how low-profile the castle's hauntings remain. Unlike other historical buildings that embrace their supernatural side, the Stanley Hotel, Bellhurst Castle does not market itself as a haunted destination.
Really?
There's no official ghost tours, no guided paranormal investigations, and no on-site exhibits about the afterlife. In fact, with its focus on luxury weddings, wine tastings, fine dining, and spa treatments, the castle's current image is decidedly more elegant than eerie.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, you saw the pictures.
Yeah.
Please.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's beautiful, for sure. Like,
no way in heck I would, like...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have, like, the Stanley that
it's their whole
the whole
shtick.
Book was written off of it.
Yeah, like, that's the whole...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, something like this, I don't know if I would.
Yeah.
Some guests have suggested that the owners may intentionally downplay the ghost stories, choosing to focus on hospitality and romance over hauntings and horror. Even photographic evidence of paranormal activity is scarce. There are no widely circulated or verifiable documented photos of spirits taken at Bellhurst Castle. No infrared captures, no thermal silhouettes, no clear EVPs have been released publicly. That's not to say strange things haven't happened, but in the world of ghost tourism, Bellhurst keeps its secrets quiet. And then there's the silence that feels louder than anything. First place built on land once home to the Canandaigua village of the Seneca Nation It's striking that there are no known reports of Native American spirits haunting the castle or surrounding property, given the mass displacement, warfare, and betrayal suffered by the indigenous people of the region. One might expect tales of unrest, of ancient spirits still wandering the hills and shores, but there's nothing. Whether that means those spirits have found peace, or have been pushed too far from their sacred lands to return, is something that we can only speculate. While Belharz Castle itself remains a quiet participant in the paranormal scene, the surrounding Finger Lake region certainly does not. According to reports from places like Sutherland House, the area plays host to a number of spooky celebrations and locations. Ghost tours through historic towns, haunted cemeteries with Civil War lore, and zombie-themed festivals in the fall. It seems the region itself embraces the haunting heritage, even if the Belharz Castle holds back.
Which is so crazy, because I feel like it's got so much potential. Like, mm-hmm. You've got it. It's right there.
Yeah. I mean, you could, and you only have, like, the two ghosts.
Yeah.
And they're friendly.
Maybe you only have the two ghosts, because there's not that many people there to be...
Correct.
Like, figuring out what else is around.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah.
So, you know, what does that all mean? Is the lack of evidence at the Belharz a mark of skepticism?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's there.
Yeah.
Or does the castle's hauntings live on in quieter ways, in the music only some can hear, shadows only some can see, and stories that live only if we choose to tell them? Maybe, just maybe, the ghosts aren't gone.
Exactly.
Maybe they're just waiting for some people to listen.
Precisely.
I totally think so.
We'd find 50 million more ghosts in there if they had, like, a ghost tour or this, and if they, like, played into it.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. But that's I also understand why they don't want to. Yeah. Because it's, like, gorgeous.
Well, yeah, because, like, who wants to have their wedding at a place in a haunted place?
Well, I mean, there's a thing for that. People do that.
For sure, but...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it is gorgeous.
You're probably not going to... I would say you probably wouldn't make the same amount of money.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, that was the Belharz.
I enjoyed that. That was fun.
I enjoyed it. I like castles.
What was interesting as well, I thought that was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like the hotel. There's always a lady in white.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lady in gray.
Some kind of bride. Mm-hmm. Some kind of lover.
Some kind of something.
Yeah.
Well, that wraps it up for us.
I enjoyed that.
This episode is because we haven't done it yet. But this episode was written by Sam. She obviously does great work, if you can't tell by some of our latest episodes. You can check her out at her own podcast, Scare Me Sam. Or you can go check her blog out at scaremesam.com. And if you have stories or anything you want to share with us, have you been to the Belharz? Do you have your own story about the Belharz?
Did you have your wedding at the Belharz?
I mean... We would just like to hear if you had your wedding at the Belharz.
Hell yeah.
Email us at ominousarchives@gmail.com. Or go and follow us at any of our social medias, The Ominous Archives. Please rate, review, comment, tell some friends, tell some family. We really appreciate it. You should come back next week because we're going to continue to dive into more strange and haunted stories in... The Ominous Archives. See ya.
See ya.